warning. This episode will be discussing disturbing content such as violence, sexism, homophobia, abortion, disease, and sexual assault. If you are not comfortable with this material, turn away from this episode. We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition, but not too much. You should aim to be successful, but not too successful. Otherwise, you would threaten the man. The words of Chimamanda Adichie have never rang truer today. Why do I mention this? This is because it is very important to today's topic. Science fiction has frequently been used as a way to advocate for equality. Though even in the most progressive and inclusive stories of their time, sexism and heteronormative ideals still persist. While shows like the original Star Trek were a major advocate for equality among races and different beliefs, due to laws of the time, sexism and lack of queer representation was still present throughout the show, and long after the show in the 70s and 80s, as the women's rights and gay rights movements gained more power, the power structure of the world responded with hatred and violence, which still persists today. There are a lot of science fiction stories that gradually began to stand up for women and people from the queer community, but oftentimes it was done in a way that would not be obvious upon the first viewing. But there were exceptions, and today I will be covering two series that stand up against the root cause of this injustice: Ridley Scott's Alien and the Metroid games. To start off, we must venture into the dark depths of the starship Nostromo's halls and talk about the central hero and villain of the story. 1977's Alien stars Ellen Ripley, a member of a science team for the spacefaring Weyland-Yutani Corporation. Originally, Ripley is simply compliant with the company's orders, and even allows one of the crew members to be brutalized and attacked if it means the company has a sample of the Xenomorph. But as more of the crew is killed off, she openly defies Weyland-Yutani's orders in order to save the rest of the crew. Ripley has a very mother-like sense of protection, not letting anyone go against her, but always for the right reasons. She knows the responsible thing to do is save the crew, no matter what it would do to their jobs. Even though Ripley is looked down upon by some of the male members of the crew, she still fights to protect them. But this kind of defiance leads to Ash, who is revealed to be a robot sent by the company to make sure the mission is done no matter the cost. This leads him to try to kill Ripley by choking her with a crumpled newspaper before being killed himself. The way Ash shoves a newspaper down Ripley's throat is deliberately meant to be a nod to sexual assault. Even though Ash is not capable of having such feelings or even the ability to engage in intercourse, this kind of horrific attack is even made more realistic. He didn't go after Ripley for pleasure, he did it as a stance of domination. Ash is killed after, but even after his robotic body is torn apart, the uncomfortably white fuel for his body splattered over is a deliberate nod to sex being a means of gaining power. And this ties into the film's other primary threat. Out of all the cosmic horrors that have graced the silver screen, the Xenomorph from Alien is, for me, the scariest monster in the sci-fi horror genre. At first glance, it's easy to understand why, with its slinky design, black color, and enormous head, with seemingly no eyes and nose, in favor of a large, twisted mouth. But this design is more than just a terrifying predator. The Xenomorph's design and its means of killing its prey make it a horrifying sexual predator, and an artistic expression of revenge against sexism and homophobia. When the movie's creature artist H.R. Giger designed the Xenomorph, the head was designed to be phallic in shape, along with the second mouth that shoots out of its larger one. The Xenomorph larva, or the face hugger, resembles a woman's vagina in its shape, and it attaches itself to the head of Kane, forcing itself down its throat. And of course, as it sheds its skin inside the host, it bursts out from his chest, effectively forcing him to give birth to it. Taking this into account, you can probably see where I'm going with this. As a reverse of the trope of the female characters being victims of the monster's assault, it is a man who has the first experience of this. One of the movie's writers, Dan O'Bannon, said in an interview,
"Everybody is always all in a knot about sex. I said, that's how I'm going to attack the audience. I'm going to attack them sexually. And I'm not going to go after the women in the audience. I'm going to attack the men. And I'm going to put in every image I can think of that I know will make the men in the audience cross their legs. Homosexual oral rape."
The brutal scenes of Kane's slow violation and death are purposeful, as they challenge the male audience to understand the true painful effects of rape, to see it for the ugly and painful thing it is. The topic of sexual assaults of men is something widely and usually tastelessly made for laughs in the majority of the entertainment industry, and a major cause of homophobia. It is again a demonstration of the true cause of all this, the masculine trade of power through sexual violence. In a statement at the U.S. Senate made in the wake of his own assault by a male Hollywood agent, actor Terry Crews commented on what it is truly about.
"The assault lasted only minutes, but what he was effectively telling me while he held my genitals in his hand was that he held the power, that he was in control."
In addition to condemning assault of men, this is some light commentary against homophobia and how it is fueled by these systems of domination. I asked my friend and a professional TV writer, Kay Grenning, about this, and they had this to say.
"And the chestburster comes out, it's also phallic. And like, essentially because the thing impregnates Kane, like, it's pretty much a sexual assault too. And I think it was interesting because, like, that moment is definitely not played for laughs. It's very horrifying. And even, like, the thing spits out acid, making it difficult to stop, which I think, like, a lot of real-life women and trans men have experienced, where it's, like, once it starts, you can't really stop it because you're not strong enough or you're too scared to stop it. And I also kind of don't like how in a lot of movies, like, guys being assaulted is played for laughs, because it's not really funny no matter what gender is being attacked."
Ultimately, the nightmare ends as Ripley, alone and more vulnerable in her underwear, slowly activates the airlock of an escape ship, killing the xenomorph by blasting it out into space. It is important that the only survivor is a woman, who has more sense in how to deal with the situation than any of the men, who all die at the hands of the xenomorph. Alien was so popular with critics and moviegoers that multiple sequels were made. Not only that, but two game developers, Gunpei Yokoi and Yoshio Sakamoto, created a game heavily inspired by Alien. That game was Metroid, which has not only become one of the most important adventure games, but the first video game to have a woman play the main character, the armored bounty hunter Samus Aran. For those of you who need to know, Samus's story involves her being tasked to destroy a species called the Metroids, which act like the xenomorphs in the way they latch onto their prey. But after witnessing the compassion of a newborn larva, Samus refuses to kill off the species, hoping to preserve them. Like Ripley, she forms an almost motherly bond to the infant Metroid, until it is killed in battle. But its death has consequences. Years later, Samus's life is put in danger by a species of invasive parasites called the X, which invade the host's DNA in order to purposefully steal their distinctive genes and replicate them, effectively creating a clone of the host. The only thing that saves her is a vaccine created from the Metroid larva's blood. Samus, however, needs to face off against an army of infected hosts, until it is found the Galactic Government seeks to weaponize the X for their own gain. But more importantly, in the most recent game, Metroid Dread, I believe we have another important example of the evil of our male-dominated culture, the control over women's bodily autonomy. In Metroid Dread, after the X parasites are destroyed, including a genetic copy of Samus's DNA called the SAX, Samus is on the run not just from the Federation, but a new enemy called Ravenbeak, a warlord from the bird-like alien race called the Chozo. Samus is hunted throughout the game by the Emmy robots that seek to kill her by impaling her on an almost phallic needle, similar to the Xenomorph's second mouth. The reason is unknown until the character Quiet Robe, another Chozo seeking to stop Ravenbeak, reveals the reason.
Samusaran, Lysanuel, he has commanded them to extract the Metroid DNA from within your body.
That in itself is evil, but what's even more shocking is that at the end of the game, Samus is revealed to be Ravenbeak's daughter, created in a lab from human DNA and his own. So it becomes more than just that, as Ravenbeak reveals his true goals, all while strangling her, whether to kill her or as some sick form of domination.
You no longer serve any purpose. Even your Metroid DNA is no longer necessary. Do you want to know why? It is because now I can clone an army of the most powerful Metroid of all. Samusaran.
Ravenbeak's desire to make more of Samus for his own ends is more than just a plot to take over the galaxy. For me, even though it could be a stretch, could be interpreted as well as her being forced to bear children against her will. Just a few weeks ago, the right to have an abortion from Roe v. Wade was recently overturned in the United States, which puts women in danger of dying from an unwanted pregnancy, or putting them in a situation where they can't afford to take care of them. A decision to withhold a woman's right to choose, made by men in power. Even though Ravenbeak isn't doing the same kind of thing these men in power do in the real world, him forcing her against her will to have her body used to create soldiers for his army are similar in their theme, yet another example of power through sexuality.
Power is everything.
The original Alien movies and Metroid games were made in an era of festering rage and anger toward a dominant class of men who were hell-bent on prolonging misogyny and homophobia at any cost. Ridley Scott stated that he had to really fight hard to get a female lead for Ripley because he was not going to let no be an answer to having a woman who could fight and take charge in a leading role. Despite Samus Aran being a revolutionary female game character, video games have always struggled with how to have proper female characters, be they playable or non-playable. It has become increasingly difficult to not be aware of the way that straight men continue to be the dominant class in the world, holding anyone back different in society from having equal rights. Despite all the progress that has been made, there is still much to do. Every time some sort of new change is made to be more welcoming to women and other groups, there has been massive amounts of pushback by the dominant class of straight males, all because of power through sexuality. So why do I do this, knowing that no matter what I try to do, nothing will get better?
Adam understood this, and he spoke to me in my anger. Don't worry, one of them will understand. One of them must. I reflected upon these words, and I see the wisdom in them. We are all bound by our experiences. They are the limits of our consciousness. But in the end, the human soul will ever reach for the truth.
At the end of Metroid Fusion, Samus reflects on the past, and how while her actions in stopping the Federation from using the X brand her a traitor, someone will understand. And to me, this means something. I feel like, as a man, I have been unable to help others who are suffering from such trauma, because I don't simply think that listening is enough. So I wanted to let you know, if you are a victim of assault or discrimination, I believe you, and I hope this helps. You might not feel like anyone cares, but I do, and if this helps you, that is everything to me. That is why I have made this. So that will be it for today's episode, guys. Again, I know that this is some very difficult subject matter, but I hope you enjoyed nonetheless. Don't worry, on the next episode, we will be covering a much more lighthearted topic. We will be covering how Star Trek, the original series, envisions a much more positive future for humanity. That's Michael Kay of World of the Future Podcast, logging out.